DW Africa Link.
Let's begin this episode by going back, way back to 1904, when the indigenous Herero people of German Southwest Africa, now Namibia, rebelled against their German occupiers. For 4 years, the German army retaliated, killing between 60,000 and 100,000 Herero people, one of the worst atrocities ever. The history of the Herero genocide remains a key issue for many around the world, partly because the German policy not to pay reparations for the Namibian genocide contrasts with its long-standing Holocaust reparations policy. That's what this podcast is about. Stay tuned. My name is Josie Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
Fast forward from 1904 to May 2021, that's over a century later. Germany finally agreed to pay Namibia 1.1 billion euros worth of compensation, but in the form of projects, as it officially recognized the Herero-Nama genocide for the first time. The money was to be dispersed into existing aid programs over 30 years and forms Germany's way of paying reparation for the atrocities of the past. Namibia has pushed for this for years and now believes such a reparation could go a long way to support communities affected by colonial era atrocities. But not everyone in Namibia is happy with negotiations and believes it is the best form of compensation. Namibia's president, Nangolo Mbumba, has been speaking to these issues in an exclusive interview for this podcast. He also took time to defend Namibia's decision to impose visa restrictions on Western countries in retaliation to how Namibians and Africans in general have been treated by these countries. I started by asking him what Namibia wants Germany to do when it comes to the issue of reparations for the genocide that occurred during colonial times.
Now you really come to the real question. It's not what you are asking me, what do I want Germany to do? That's not the correct question.
What could be the correct question?
The correct question is, when you do something wrong and you recognize that you have done something wrong, what do you do? You make sure that you stretch your hand to the person you have wronged. If you are a strong person of a good will, you apologize. Mm-hmm. And you facilitate to remove the wrongs that have been done. And that's what we have been negotiating. Mm-hmm. First, we have to talk to the German to agree that what was done is genocide. It took time, but now on both sides we agree that it is genocide that was done. Then the issue of the apology, they never doubted that. They said they are ready to apologize. Okay? What has been is, how do you compensate life lost? Mm-hmm. Lives lost, not only in the fighting, but in the concentration camps. Not only in the concentration camp, removing all their land and all their cows and other properties. To weigh that, what was lost and what could be done now, has been quite a challenge. But we think with goodwill, we can find a formula, not a perfect one, but at least a formula to indicate that the wrong had been recognized and atonement or reparation has been done. And it can also be done in one year. It has to be done step by step so that the community feel vindicated, that their demand for reparation, their demand for the wrong that have been done. Some of the process we are going to do is that when we have agreed, the majority of the funds will be used to buy back some of the farms so that the people who lost the land will get their land. Okay? We have a constitution which says you cannot take property from somebody which is registered in their name without compensation. So we use some of this German money to buy some of those land so that at least the community can have a place that they can call their own. Then we have certain institutions that have to be strengthened. We have certain development, the issue of water, we have already mentioned. The issue of institutions, schools, clinics, hospitals, churches or places of worship, community halls, what are they going to do? The road network, the creation of places where people can come and practice their culture. All those things have to be done. It has to be done, but specifically in the areas where these crimes were committed, the central Namibia and southern Namibia specifically.
And some affected communities, Nama and Herero, have complained of not being adequately consulted on this issue. As you say, it's all in people's hands. Mm-hmm. Would you say that has been a failure on the government's part?
First of all, it is the community started indicating or demanding, as I said. The community started that. But how do you negotiate anything? You can't have every Namibian coming to Germany to negotiate and every German person coming to Namibia to negotiate. You have to negotiate within the authority of a state. Okay? Mm-hmm. So we have been talking to our traditional leaders. But in every community, democracy is democracy. You will always have different views. But that does not mean we have not consulted them. They know what we are doing. Even before I left home, they knew I was coming to Germany. But I did not come here to negotiate. I came here to attend this Hamburg Sustainability Conference. But we also used the opportunity then to meet. Mm. And not only me and the Chancellor, but with our teams. Nothing secret, nothing is being covered. We are ready to serve our people and the people from all our communities.
But Your Excellency, would you say there could be a problem of a power imbalance when trying to negotiate with a wealthy nation that you also need as a development partner?
Yeah, that's a fair question. That's a fair question. But we have indicated to our German friends right from the beginning, that whatever or wherever they have helped us in the past or continue to help us now in terms of the development of our country, that is a separate thing. The issue of genocide has to be addressed on its own merit and in its own account. And the institution that will be created to rectify what was lost, what was destroyed, will have to have its own institution to do those things. So that should not be a compensation that we help you to build a school and therefore we cannot give you the money for reparation.
Is that
reparation is a different case.
Is that clear, on the German part?
Very clear. I'm saying it now while I'm Germany. While I am in Germany.
Okay, now your country recently tightened entry requirements for countries that require Namibians to have visas. Do you think the visa requirements from these Western nations are unfair? Mm-hmm.
Yes, we tighten it because they are the one who started some of these rules. Reciprocity is very, very important rule. I stretch my hand, In all, the only way to shake your hand is that you have also to stretch your hand. We cannot have our citizens as Namibians, even those with diplomatic passport and official passport, coming here subjected to indignities. They are treated as if they are coming from a country with leprosy. No. And that is the thing at the very beginning we have already declared. People coming from countries that have tourists, business people, they can come to Namibia without a visa. But when we come to their countries, you are demanded a visa, and you even have to pay for the visa. To pay for the visa for what? I'm the one coming to your country, and I have to pay for the visa to visit your country. Is your street made up, paved with gold, or what? So we are not saying people should not come to Namibia. We are saying, since you treat our citizens that way, we will also demand from your citizen. When they come, we will give them visa. We are even kind. We give you visa on arrival, but pay for it. Up to now, they have not yet started paying. The Ministry of Home Affairs will decide when they should start now.
I was speaking there to Namibia's President, Nangolo Mbumba.
Africa is changing. Don't get left behind. Tune in to Africa Link.
At the Africa Link podcast, we always look across the continent to see how the stories and issues we are dealing with play out or at times even overlap. Let's talk about another form of reparation, and this time around, we go to Nigeria, where a coalition which includes prominent NGOs such as Global Alliance for Incinerator Alternatives, GAIA, Community Development Advocacy Foundation, CODAF, Pan-African Vision for the Environment, PAVEN, and Renewlean Development Initiative is also pushing for climate reparations for African nations. The various organizations argue that African countries have been unfairly affected by the climate crisis despite contributing minimally to global carbon emissions. So, how should such a reparation be negotiated and what form should it take? Joining me is Melody Eninaya, Program Manager for Environment at the Community Development Advocacy Foundation, CODAF. So yeah, thank you so much, Melody. Let's start by talking about the necessity of the push for climate reparation.
Okay, climate reparation is highly necessary because it is one of the first steps needed to restore and rebuild a better world and Africa. One where no one is left behind, and one that stands to address the root of the problem. The multinational companies in the global north that has caused the climate crisis must have to pay their debt to the people that have been harmed by their greed and their actions. It is in all journals that Africa actually produces less than 4% of gas emission that causes global warming. The other 96% are produced by the rest part of the world, which includes China, America, European states. At the long run, you notice that Africa receives the most blunt of the effects. So the global north committed more to the climate crisis that we as Africans are facing today. For instance, in Nigeria, in Niger Delta, in one of the communities where CODAF work spreads across, called Beniboye, that community used to be 15 kilometers into the seashore. But between 2011 and now, 12 kilometers has been washed away due to increase in ocean level. So that is to say coastal erosion had happened, and properties, livelihood, ecosystem, biodiversity, crop products, and even culture has been lost because you cannot actually separate the ecosystem from the people's culture. So it is only fair that Africa refers and demands for reparations, because without these reparations, Global South countries and communities that are most impacted by and least responsible for the climate crisis will continue to go through increasing economic crisis to manage and try to adapt to climate impact. And the world also will also keep burning.
In what form do you want such reparations?
Okay. So reparation, actually, if we begin to talk about forms, we need to understand that reparations signifies that something is wrong and something was broken. Maybe someone was also hurt and someone was responsible for that. So it is very important to emphasize that reparations are not aid. Yes, just like the Global North sees it, because they see it as aiding the Global South. So unlike aid, reparations are to restore, and they are not voluntary. Yes, there is an obligation based on human rights and environmental justice to pay up for the destruction experienced due to the climate crisis. So if I must be very clear, climate finance is not an aid, but rather should be reparations to fix what has been broken. So reparations are more than financial restitutions. Yes. So they should be given not as an act of charity, but as an act of responsibility and accountability. So most importantly, if we speak about forms, then first and foremost, African debt must be cancelled. Yes, because the debt, this money that is being poured into climate finance, is nowhere near the amount that is needed to address the impacts climate communities are already facing. Moreover, the majority of finance currently comes in the form of loans to the Global South. This means that countries and communities most vulnerable go into debt in order to deal with the impact of climate crisis, and then owe this debt to the countries that caused the climate crisis. So if it must be monetary, then it must come as a grant, not as loan. Also, it can also come in the form of ecosystem restoration, because a whole lot of this frontline community, their environment has been degraded. A whole lot has happened in their community. And it can also come in form of projects on skills acquisition and startups to communities, because many Global South communities have lost livelihoods to climate issues caused by the Global North. And it can also come as land grants, as many has lost ancestral homes and houses to climate crisis. So it can also come as capacity building, enacting laws and policies to ensure that these marginalized communities are listened to and prioritized. So overall, to restore our Africa into a better, safe, and climate-just world, climate reparation should include compensation for direct impacts of the destruction fossil fuel industries have caused on communities, on their health, livelihood, homes, environment. It should also include other forms of climate finance for adaptation and for a just transition.
Wow. You've really elaborated, Melody, on how Africa should approach the reparation talks. And I hope that our leaders will actually consider that and know that there is a difference between aid and, you know, accepting or taking responsibility, not to actually mix up the two, that if a country says they're donating these and you feel like those, that also is like a form of reparation. But let's talk about how Africa can deal with the impact of climate change. I know you touched on a few points there, but are there any specific projects or innovations you think would be useful, also considering the fact that Africa has a very young population?
Okay. Considering projects that that can be seen as reparation, just like I mentioned before, if reparations comes in form of skill acquisition and startup projects, it has helped marginalized community overcome the impact of climate crisis in their livelihood, because majority of them, if not all, have lost their source of livelihood. In the Niger Delta, where CODAF work spreads across, we have seen cases where, because all of them are fishermen and farmers, and their land, they have lost it to oil spill. They have lost it to climate crisis and all of that. So most of them have lost their livelihood. So if reparation comes as key acquisition and startup project for them, that has also helped them overcome the impact of climate crisis on their livelihood. If it also comes as provision of healthcare facility, it will help communities that their health has been impacted to have medical care, because majority of the impacted community do not have functional healthcare facilities. And the truth is that these communities, they breathe in hydrocarbon, they eat hydrocarbon, they drink hydrocarbon, and they eat hydrocarbon. And all of these have affected their health. But when you do a thorough check in those communities, you find out that they do not have even a single health facility in that community. So, which is to say, they die on a daily basis. For if reparation comes as provision of health facility, that will improve their health too. So if it also comes in the form of compensation, it will also help communities work towards reducing the impact of climate crisis. They are already experiencing this. Of course, we know that. So if it comes in form of enacting laws and policies to ensure that the most marginalized are listened to and prioritized, we could start looking at laws such as the outright ban of single-use plastics, because already micro and nanoplastics are finding their ways into the bloodstreams of individuals. And currently, the largest number of plastics in Africa are all from the global north, as they see Africa as a dumping ground. So Africa is actually paying the costliest price.
But then I hear you, Melody. However, this still takes me back to the issue of awareness when it comes to our young population in Africa. Yes, Africa is being seen as a dumping site, but also we have a responsibility, right? This is where my question still stands. Is the awareness enough that, okay, this plastic should not be thrown into the river, into the beach, into the waters? It's not supposed to be like that.
Well, speaking on awareness, I think we still have some work to do in awareness, but I know that a whole lot of organizations in Africa have been doing a whole lot in awareness. So the only thing that we are missing somewhere are government helping us to put laws, enact laws and policies to aid us in this. Because if there are laws that are guiding all of this, there is something about policy and policing. If there are policies and there are policing around it, this can be controlled. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How hopeful are you for such a campaign ahead of COP29?
Well, okay. Well, I think COP29 is billed as the finance COP. So CODAF as an organization, in partnership with other organizations, has over the years increased the campaign to this effect. And at the just concluded African People's Counter COP, We had organizations and frontline communities from more than 21 countries in Africa. We are present and have gone back, all of us, we have gone back to our respective countries to engage our leaders who will be negotiating in COP29 with the 10-point demand that we developed, that we came up with at the APCC. So if our African negotiators negotiation are centered on these 10-point demands, then it will be Africa speaking in one voice. And I will be very hopeful that the demands of the African people will be heard and changes be made.
Thank you so much, Melody, for that insightful discussion. That's it for this edition of Africa Link. Remember, you are not just a listener, but a part of our community. Your feedback and participation makes this podcast what it is. We value your insights and encourage you to share your thoughts with us. Click follow so you can catch all of the Africa Link episodes. This podcast was co-produced and edited by Isaac Kelechi. My name is Josie Mahachi. Thanks for listening. Until next time, it's bye for now.
Minds.